we must first further understand the Jewish approach to time by distinguishing between its two primary forms of sacred time, Shabbat and the holidays. Shabbat, a commemoration of God creating the world, proclaims, as we will see, a universal message that the Jews have bequeathed to the world. The holidays, in contrast, and the calendar on which the holidays are based, embodies Jewish chosenness, particularism, separation from the world. These two forms of sacred time will be explicated now in a talk that I have titled, A Tale of Two Astronauts. In 2003, Ilan Ramon, a hero of the Israeli Air Force, who had been the youngest participant in the miraculous strike on the Iraqi nuclear reactor, became the first Israeli astronaut taking part in the mission of the space shuttle Columbia. On the occasion of this historic moment for his career and for the state of Israel, he asked a rabbi who lived in Florida near Cape Canaveral a halakhic question that had never been asked in Jewish history. Representing the entire Jewish people, he said to the rabbi, he felt that he wanted to observe Shabbat in space, pronouncing the Kiddush, the sanctification of the Sabbath, over a goblet of wine that he was bringing along for the occasion. The problem, of course, was, how do you keep Shabbat in orbit? How do you observe the Sabbath in space? How do you mark the passage of time when one is going in and out of past and future, where there's a sunset every 90 minutes and a new week every 10 and a half hours, and every 20 days is Rosh Hashanah? As Ilan Ramon himself quipped, Jerusalem, we have a problem. The question was passed along by the Florida rabbi to Talmudic scholars throughout the world, and thus this Israeli astronaut inspired one of the most interesting discussions about Shabbat among halachas that had ever occurred. In the end, Ilan Ramon was advised to follow the time in Cape Canaveral. And thus we have, to this day, one of the most incredible images of modern Israel, a Jew floating in the heavens, sanctifying the Sabbath over a cup of wine, remembering God's creation of the universe in 6 days as he sails amidst the stars. It was, of course, also one of the last images we have of Ramon alive. The Columbia exploded upon attempting re-entry, and Ramon, along with the American astronauts with whom he served, all were lost to their loved ones and to their peoples, but not lost entirely. Several months after the Columbia disaster, the remains of the space shuttle were discovered in a field in Texas, and amidst the wreckage, Ramon's diary, which had survived the explosion, the fall through the atmosphere, and months of rain in the field, was recovered and analyzed. On the pages were the words of the Kiddush, of the sanctification and proclamation of the Sabbath that Jews have recited for millennia, which he had inscribed in preparation for the journey, thereby binding up forever the legacy of this Israeli military hero with the message of Shabbat. At the NASA memorial service, the rabbi to whom Ramon had addressed his unusual question pondered the fact that now this astronaut's legacy is forever bound up with this unusual Jewish legal discussion. And he reflected that, you know, in the end, Ilan has taught all of us, meaning Jew and non-Jew, a very important lesson, one which lies at the very heart of Shabbat, that no matter how fast you're going, we need to stop wherever we are to ponder why God put us here on earth. And that ultimately is the message of Shabbat that Jews have proclaimed to the world. Why, the Gaon of Vilna once asked, did God stop creation after 6 days? God, he said, wanted to show us that what we create becomes meaningful only once we stop creating it and start remembering why it was worth creating in the first place. It was a message that we proclaimed in ancient times, and it is much even more relevant today in our technological age. What we create becomes meaningful only once we stop creating it and start remembering why it was worth creating in the first place. This is what the Sabbath is, and it proclaims an idea that is universal in nature, teaching us, as the writer Judith Shulevitz once put it, the Gaon of Vilna's point is that in our lives we have to remember to stop because we have to stop to remember. This is what Shabbat marks. And if Jews have observed the Shabbat, it is first and foremost to proclaim this message of creation and of commemoration and reflection on that creation to the world. The holidays, in contrast, are not universal in nature, but covenantal. They mark moments in Jewish history, and for Jewish tradition, the calendar is linked to an astronomical phenomenon that has, for Jews, symbolized the uniqueness of the Jewish experience. And this brings us to our second journey into space. December 1972, Apollo 17 lands on the moon, and Gene Cernan, along with his pilot Harrison Schmitt, becomes the last man to date to walk on the lunar surface. If you read, as I have, the transcript of the broadcast, you will see that Gene Cernan, perhaps while watching the lunar rover, says on live feed to all of America, and I quote, "Manischewitz, look at that go." Where did that come from? Turns out that being on live feed, the astronauts were warned not to use profanity and had to use substitutes. Thus, NASA.gov's website reports, I have looked this up, quote, "The B. Manischewitz Company has long been a major American producer of kosher foods. During Apollo 17, Gene often used Manischewitz as an exclamation or as a substitute for swearing." To recap, a company known for Passover foods becomes so famous that its name is uttered on the moon, so that the Jewish observance of the Exodus is united for all time with our encounter with the lunar surface. And this is appropriate because the moon and the Exodus have always been linked for Jews. The calendar of Rabbinic Judaism, according to tradition, was the first commandment given on the eve of the Exodus from Egypt, obligating us to link all of our holidays to the waxing and waning of the moon. Because the lunar cycle is between 29 and 30 days, in the Jewish calendar, Jewish months tend to alternate between 29 and 30 days. And because its months are lunar, the holidays that occur in the middle of a Jewish month, such as Pesach and Sukkot, coincide with a full moon. Whereas Rosh Hashanah, which always takes place on the first of the month, will always coincide with the new moon, or Rosh Chodesh. The Jewish calendar is primarily lunar in nature. And for the rabbinic tradition, if the Jewish calendar is linked to the cycle of the moon from the very moment of the Exodus, it is because the moon itself is the embodiment of the Jewish people. Israel is born emerging from the darkness of slavery into the light of liberty. In the moon's seeming disappearance into darkness, only to be suddenly reborn, the sages saw the ultimate symbol of the eternal people. We are informed in the Talmud that during periods of persecution, when the observance of Jewish ritual was restricted and the communication of the calendar was forbidden, the secret code to announce the new moon, the new month, was the phrase David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayam, King David lives, the Jewish people endure, as does Judaism, its faith. All this for Jewish tradition is embodied by the slender sliver of the moon reborn in the midst of darkness. For us, the holidays that we celebrate, which commemorate the providential moments of our history, are linked to the moon, whose renewal reminds us of God's bond to us. Before Gene Cernan clambered back into Apollo 17, he etched the letters TDC into the lunar surface. Those are his daughter's initials, Tracy Dawn Cernan. Because there is no weather on the moon, Tracy's initials will be on the lunar surface for millions of years, or as Cernan once put it, forever, however long that is. This is a striking gift from a father to a child, and it means that wherever and whenever Tracy Cernan finds herself, she can look up at the heavens and be reminded by the moon of her father's love. The Talmud similarly describing the Jewish encounter of the new moon every month, tells us that Il male lo zachu Yisrael lahakbol pnei aviyam shebashamayim lepam achat bachodesh dayo. It is enough that the Jewish people are granted the opportunity to greet their Father in heaven once a month, insisting that Jews see in the renewed light of the moon a rendezvous between themselves and Avihem Shebashamayim, their Father in heaven. That the moon is a reminder of the exclusive relationship between God and his people Israel, of the indelibility of the Torah, of the eternity of the covenant, and of the fact that despite the insistence of many civilizations to the contrary, the bond between Israel and God has not been superseded and remains forever. The Jewish observance of two sacred times, the Shabbat on the one hand, and the holidays founded upon the lunar cycle on the other, represent the distinct but intertwining aspects of Jewish existence. We have always considered ourselves apart from and a part of the world. And our chosenness is linked to our connection with and our monotheistic message to humanity. Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch once put it this way: from the onset of creation, the Sabbath was an integral part of humankind, teaching men the awareness of their function as creatures and servants of God. The new moon is a distinctive mark instituted at the start of Jewish history to serve as a catalyst for the understanding and fulfillment of the Jewish people's history. The Sabbath, he says, is the signature of our human existence, and the new moon, the symbol of our particular Jewish calling. The two forms of sacred time in Judaism, Sabbath and the holidays, thus embody the duality of Jewish existence. Our blessing over the Torah proclaims that you, God, have chosen us from amongst the nations. But we never forget at the same time that part and parcel of our chosenness involves God's proclamation to Abraham that through you all the families of the world will be blessed. Gene Cernan's co-pilot, Harrison Schmitt, the second to last man to walk on the moon, retired from NASA and entered politics, becoming the U.S. Senator from New Mexico. When he ran for re-election, his political opponent faced a problem. How do you run against a famous astronaut, a national hero, and a flash of genius? His campaign ran the following negative ad, quote, "Harrison Schmitt, what on earth has he done for you lately?" End quote. The renewal of the moon reminds Jews that we are chosen. But for us, this is a source of pride, but never arrogance. Judaism never lets us forget that we have been chosen for God's plan for the earth, that we are a central part of his designs for the world. In its two modes of marking sacred time, Israel proclaims itself a moon-like nation that is also the monotheistic messenger of God to humanity. Seen through the prism of modern cosmology, an interesting scientific parallel emerges. The moon, as we know, orbits the earth, is bound to the earth, and might be seen by some as an insignificant astronomical addendum to the earth. Yet scientists, pondering what has been called the Goldilocks paradox, why only Earth seems to have the conditions that are just right for the emergence of sentient life, have discovered that a large part of the answer has to do with the moon. Astronomer Jacques Lascar wrote, "We owe our present climate stability to an exceptional event, the presence of the moon." Physicist Fred Herene tells us the following: without an extra large moon orbiting at the right distance from us, scientists predict that the Earth would be subject to a runaway greenhouse effect as on Venus, or a permanent ice age, as Mars would experience if it had more water. And so we have a minuscule moon, so vanishingly small when compared to the other celestial bodies, to the planets of our solar system, is positioned in a manner crucial to the survival of the human race. Likewise, the Jewish people, a minuscule nation, exceedingly seemingly insignificant when compared to other peoples and nations swirling in the solar system of societies and civilizations. That nation is perfectly positioned against the odds to have a critical, indelible, enduring moral impact on humanity. We are, the essayist Milton Himmelfarb once said, small enough to amount to a statistical error in the Chinese census. And yet we are always larger than our numbers. Big things happen around us and to us. I will insist, John Adams once said, that the Hebrews have done more to civilize man than any other nation. Even if I were an atheist who believed that all was ordered by chance, I should believe that chance had ordered the Jews to preserve and propagate to all mankind the doctrine of a supreme, intelligent, wise, almighty sovereign of the universe, which I believe to be the great essential principle of all morality and consequently all civilization. Atem monin lo ve'ein umot ha'olam monin lo, say the rabbis in the Midrash. Israel will calculate its months by keying its calendar to the moon, while other nations, here it refers to Christian civilization, will select the sun. This is not a superficial statement of comparative calendrical devices, but rather a metaphor. Throughout the ages, the sages are implying Israel has been moon-like in its relation to other nations. We have for centuries revolved around other peoples, never free to choose our own trajectory. In fact, by all logic, we should have been extinct long ago. And yet we have not only survived, we have critically impacted and shaped the nature and destiny of the human race. The moon is indeed separate from the earth, but it indelibly impacts the earth. The Jewish people are separate from other peoples, as its holidays remind us. And yet, even in the darkest moments of its history, when it experienced nothing but hate from humanity, Israel understood its mission in connection to humanity. And so it proclaimed every week in marking and consecrating the Sabbath. We are moon-like, but like the moon, we have impacted the world. Or as Rabbi Hirsch puts it, Jewish history is nothing but a moonlit reflection of how we have carried out our moral obligation, the moonlit resolution of our destiny. In the end, Jean Cernan not only made mention of Passover foods as he strolled the crater-filled surface of the moon, his own reflections from the lunar surface as he viewed the earth actually embody all that the Jewish message of the Shabbat is about. As he put it, quote, "You find the earth is revolving very mysteriously and yet very majestically on an axis you can't see. And all of a sudden, as the earth turns, you look at Australia and Asia and Europe and the entire continent of Africa. You can look from the icebergs of the north to the snow-covered mountains of the pole at the south. It's just an awe-inspiring, overpowering experience." And then he said, "You look over your shoulder and you're surrounded not by a blue sky, but by a black sky. You're in sunlight surrounded by the blackest black you can conceive in your mind. No one confuses the blackness with darkness. It's a blackness that is the endlessness of space and time. And the earth is three-dimensional in this blackness. It's dynamic and alive. It captures you," Cernan said, "but you don't understand it. You can't show it to anybody, but you know it exists because you saw it with your own eyes. Science and technology got you there, but it's like you're standing on a plateau where science has met its match. The earth," he says, "doesn't tumble through space. When you watch it from the moon, you see it move with logic and certainty and with beauty beyond comprehension. It's just too beautiful to have happened by accident. There has to be somebody bigger than you and me that put it all together. There's no question in my mind," he said, "that there's a creator of the universe. Someone placed our little world, our sun and our moon, where they are in the dark void." Meanwhile, Ilan Ramon, the man who testified in orbit to the Jewish belief in the creator of that world over a cup of wine, he also, right before he died, testified to the eternal rebirth of the Jewish people. Along with his Sabbath kit, Ramon took with him into orbit a tiny scroll that had been utilized by a Dutch rabbi by the name of Rabbi Simon Dasburg in the concentration camp of Bergen-Belsen to perform a bar mitzvah for a young boy who survived. Holding Rabbi Dasburg's Torah on live feed to all of Israel, Ilan Ramon said to his country, "Ze sefer Torah katan shelifnei 60 shana, yeled katan beBergen-Belsen kibeloto meharav shel Amsterdam shelimedoto likrata bar mitzvah." This is a tiny Torah scroll that 60 years ago was received by a young boy in Bergen-Belsen from a rabbi who taught him for his bar mitzvah ceremony. "V'yachshav," he said, "and now, hu iti b'chalal, it is now with me in space." And for one moment, for an incredible moment, overcome with emotion, Ramon lessens his grip on the Torah and it begins to float further towards the heavens. Rabbi Dasburg's daughter, interviewed in Israel later, said that Ze haya drishat shalom min hashamayim, siman chayim min ha'avar. This was a greeting from the heavens, a sign of life from the past. Ramon himself said the same. "This Torah," he told all of Israel, "ze chevel mikasher ma'od miragesh. This is an extraordinarily emotional bond that connects us. V'ze miyatzeg yoter mikol. And this represents more than anything. Hayecholet shel ha'am ha'yudi, the ability of the Jewish people to endure, to survive, and to thrive. Shabbat marks God's creation of the world and his concern for all mankind. Our calendar, lunar in essence, marks the covenantal uniqueness and chosenness of Israel. We proclaim both truths, and we as Jews will continue to do so until both truths, as predicted by the prophets, are recognized by the world and the verse in Isaiah will be fulfilled. And it shall be on every new moon and on every Sabbath in its time that all humanity will come to bow before me, saith the Lord. V'haya midei chodesh b'chodesho midei shabbat b'shabbato yavo kol basor nishtachavot lefanai ne'um Adonai. Thank you very much. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. If you enjoyed this lecture, please be sure to sign up for future updates and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Thank you for watching.